Planning, asset protection, and more. Sign up for an educational workshop at elderadvisorslaw.com. Your community, your opinions, your forum. This is your talk show on WCLO. Opinions expressed on your talk show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WCLO or Big Radio staff, management, or sponsors. The open phone and text line number is 608-752-4000. Now, here's the host of your talk show, Tim Bremel.
All right, welcome back to the program. And we welcome into the studio the director of the Rock County Historical Society, Paul Vanderveld. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. It's good to be back.
Happy semiquincentennial.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it. Should be good events out there.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, for sure.
But we wanted to take just a minute and kind of consider our own history locally a little bit, and that's what you guys do at the Janesville Historical Society.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, the 4th of July obviously was a big deal. Certainly was a bigger deal in the original colonies than what would have been this far west,
right?
You know, back then. Right. Now we think of ourselves in the middle of the country. Well, back then, this was like the western wilderness.
That's right. Yeah. And I've been learning a lot since I've been in the role, so I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit of, giving the community here a little bit of history about Janesville.
Well, that's good. So, you know, as we consider our little community here, I think people would be interested just to know, all right, well, how did we get here? Where did this start? People have, a sense of, well, it obviously was named for somebody. That's why it's Janesville. And
right.
We'll get to that. But it started way before then.
Right. And actually, in 1835, it was the first couple settlers by the name of John Inman and William Holmes. And they actually built a log cabin on the Rock River. And that really was the mark of what became the city of Janesville. And an interesting fact about that is it wasn't just those two. Through that first winter, they actually had 9 people that were staying in that single log cabin. So it was pretty tight
fit. And it was probably a pretty small cabin. I mean, these days you say log cabin and people get these visions of things up north and whatever in their 4 or 5 bedrooms. And No.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Having 9 people in a small little log cabin like that. But they made it work. You know?
I have an acquaintance who kind of wanted to do away with all the current day whatever and can, you know, live off the land and move to Alaska,
right?
Where apparently you can still do this without a lot of zoning hassles, and you could just go there and you can build your own,
that's right,
home shack kind of thing, I call it these days. That's what it's good. And that's probably what this looked like, and he's posted pictures of it, and it's maybe, I don't know, 12 by 20 feet or something, and it's just a cobbling of boards and logs and things that they found around there. I'm guessing that to some degree this was not the Taj Mahal.
Oh yeah, I mean, you've seen it in the movies, right? And
yeah.
So, you know, you see a handful of people and it's pretty tightly fit, but 9 people?
That's quite a few, but that's what you did to survive
the
winters back then. And these would have been significantly colder winters. I don't really, you know, climate has changed some over the time, but
yeah, I would imagine.
But if you were from even the East Coast, you know, this idea of those kind of the kind of temperatures we can get would have been a little striking for those folks, I would guess.
For sure. And this, but they knew how to survive, though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So this was in 1835.
Yeah.
13 years before Wisconsin became a state.
Right, right. Well, and I was going to say a year after that, you know, really is when Janesville got its name. And it was a territorial legislator, you know, established Rock County seat on land that it was actually owned by Henry Janes, which you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that when they established it, Janes actually wanted to name the community Blackhawk, but it was a U.S. Postmaster General that, you know, made a decision to call it Janesville, just in recognition of Henry Janes and his contribution, his donation of land to the community.
So we've got governmental influence over an area that's not yet a state.
Right.
Which might strike people as kind of weird. Like, well,
yeah,
you know, we have no current day examples of that.
No, right, right. And again, I think just back to our earlier comments about, you know, the settlers are making it work. They just, you know, they worked together and made things.
So if it was the postmaster in 1836 deciding it was going to be named Janesville, then at some point the settlers there must have been able to get a letter. Kind of
yeah, right.
It might have taken weeks, but eventually they could get a letter and they could get one out. Through, I don't know, Pony Express or whatever, however they were servicing it back there, it would be really interesting to, you know, be able to go back in time and look at that just a little bit.
I'd agree.
But Henry Janes, the idea of naming the community Black Hawk, you would think, well, if he's here and whatever, why wouldn't he want it named after himself? But Black Hawk was a Indian chief.
That's correct.
Of a tribe that was in this area, and really kind of, I don't know all the history of it either, Paul. But
I think it probably speaks to who he was as an individual to recognize, you know.
The
community.
The people that were here before we got here.
Right.
So to that degree, that was pretty honorable, I would think.
Yep.
Depending on the reasoning. And this area was kind of known. When I first moved to my first radio job up in Fort Atkinson, they kind of call it the land of Black Hawk.
Right.
This was where that tribe.
Yeah. And I've been hearing all about that. As I shared on my last show, you know, being here relatively new to the community and learning a lot. And that's one piece to it. So, but yeah, then, you know, about 17 years later, then, you know, Janesville.
So I wonder what we were, Paul, before. So you were Janesville, but you weren't Wisconsin because it wasn't Wisconsin yet then.
Yeah.
Like, did you just mail the letter to Janesville?
yeah, you're checking me on
well, I know you're not a history teacher, and I don't hold that to you.
But it's an interesting thought, though.
It would be interesting if anybody out there had, like, a letter or something that, you know, family in this area or whatever might have gotten handed down from generation just to see what it looks like from the address standpoint, because there was no Wisconsin and there were no zip codes. I know that because today's factoid in history, by the way, is zip codes were implemented on this day in 1963.
Okay. Well, I just learned something new. So
I didn't. I often talk about that because lately when I do the history, I'm like, oh, there's so many things that happened. 1963 was the year I was born. And I'm like, well, I thought there were always zip codes.
Yeah.
But literally, up until the year I was born, there was no such thing as a zip code. You just mailed it to the city and the state.
Yeah, well, I got a chuckle. I probably learned that in a history class, but I certainly don't remember it. So thanks for sharing that.
Who knows how you got stuff here. Wisconsin becomes a state in 1848.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit more organized history, I guess, of what goes on in Janesville.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of what I was jumping into in 53 is when Janesville became an official city, right? And so it was the first city election. It was actually an A. Hyatt Smith became the first mayor of Janesville. That incorporation marked the beginning of organized municipality government and really kind of set forth the stage of the rapid growth around Janesville.
All right. So people are perhaps remembering, and there's a lot of people that probably know this stuff, Paul, but I'm kind of with you. I learn as I go. A. Hyatt Smith. Well, Hyatt Smith is a hall on the UROC campus, I believe.
I think you're correct on that.
So some naming rights there.
Yeah.
But it should be noted again, because we have this discussion from time to time, that when we became an officially recognized city, we had a mayor and not a city manager.
That's right.
As did almost every community back then.
That's right. Yes, sir.
I was a mayor. But I had no idea of the relation to the name Hyatt Smith from Hyatt Smith Hall to, Janesville's first mayor. Very interesting.
Yeah.
The community continues to grow throughout that period.
Well, and I think really marked in the late 1800s, a woman by the name of Carrie Jacobs Bond became a world-renowned singer, pianist, and a songwriter. And I wanted to share that piece is that we just had a seminar and had a professor come from Pennsylvania to talk about Kerry Jacobs Bond. And just a fun fact about that is we went to lunch the day before, and he was sharing me things about Kerry Jacobs Bond. And one was a song that in those days they considered was being overplayed. It was being played everywhere in the churches, the clergy and the pastors were like, okay, we got to stop playing this song. And then he mentioned the song, I Love You Truly. And I said, wait a minute. You mean the song that Ernie and Bert, not from Sesame Street, but Ernie and Bert in front of the old Granville House sang to Mary and George Bailey on It's a Wonderful Life. And I said, you know what's so funny about that? As a family, we watch that movie every year. And my daughters are, you know, from weeks to come, or weeks after that, say, Dad, you can stop singing that song in the hallway. So I kind of made that connection of being overplayed, but I was pretty fascinated by that.
And she was born in Janesville, right?
That's right. Yeah, Janesville native. I failed to mention that. Yes.
So, again, at that point, you think of the role of women in society, right, in 1862, and there were very few that had any prominence whatsoever. So for her to not only be a singer but an actual songwriter, and selling that kind of volume of sheet music back in 1862, yeah, when a million meant something.
Yeah, right. Yes. I think he did some equivalent of what she was making, maybe, I don't know, it was the highest end, maybe 80,000 now is equivalent to 50 million or something like that. But she was really a groundbreaker for women, you know, as it relates to, you know, being a songwriter.
And we do have, I know, still a commemoration of where she was born, in the house that she lived on the corner of West Court and Oak Hill.
That's correct. Yep. So the professor pointed that out when we went to lunch.
When you want to learn a little history. We call it, and it was interesting that I learned it, you know, we call it Bond Park, but it's really Kerry Jacobs Bond.
That's right.
Park.
That's right.
That we established here in the city as a recognition of that. So pretty interesting. The song, I Love You Truly, I think that when we were doing all these murals downtown in the area, I think there's a mural depicting that as well, if I'm not mistaken. Somebody can correct me on that, but I think that's part of
I think that was mentioned in the seminar.
Yeah,
that's,
I think,
correct.
That was part of our, that's part of our downtown kind of honoring of that very well-known and historical figure. So, we're starting to gain some prominence here, Paul.
That's right.
You know, now we got a famous singer, songwriter, composer, and people are starting to go, "Where's Janesville? And what's it got to offer?"
Yeah, that's right. Well, and then in the late 1800s, you know, was the birth of Parker Penn, and again, that was something that I wasn't aware of until I started the role. But it was a native, Janesville native, by the name of George Parker, who founded the company, Parker Pen Company, and really developed a more reliable fountain pen. And then after that, the company became the world's premier writing instrument manufacturer, and it was all happened in Janesville. And it really put Janesville on the international map. Fun fact about that is that a lot of presidents have used the Parker Pen, world leaders, and also the pen was signed on numerous international treaties. And an additional fun fact about that is, community, come down and get a tour of our location. We have a full exhibit of the Parker pens, so you get an opportunity to see those pens in our facilities.
And, you know, we're sitting in the former world headquarters of Parker Pen.
Yep.
You know, that fact isn't lost on me. And there's a little bit of artwork still in the building that shows, or photographs that show the old building before all the retrofit here and all that kind of stuff. And it's got some fascinating history behind it. And someday we should just we should send you out to find a couple of people that can really just speak to the history of Parker Pen and whatever and bring them up here and talk about that, because it really, as much as anything, I mean, we tend to think of Janesville as the GM town, but it really started out as the Parker town.
Well, that's right. Yeah, right. And I think that would be great.
And Parker Pens, I do recall someone relating the story to me how that started, where, yeah, basically George Parker was just so annoyed with how his fountain pen kept blurring or not working or whatever. And so he's like, I'm going to invent a better mousetrap. And he did. And from there, the rest is, as they say, history.
Tim, you're a pretty good historian.
Well, I can't tell you why I retain what I retain, yeah. Paul. Some stuff I retain, some stuff I don't.
Yeah.
But I also seem to recall that of the documents, and there have been many, I think most U.S. presidents used Parker pens to sign stuff.
That's correct.
Although I think the current president uses a Sharpie. it's not exactly glamorous, but I think it was a Parker pen that was used to sign the treaty for the end of World War II.
That's correct.
Relatively sure. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay, yeah. I remember some history, just not the stuff that's going to make a difference. Yeah, and then, we continue to grow. I don't know what the population is at that time, but I'm sure we're now into the thousands. And it looks like not a bad spot between where we are, and we're on the river. So we have, at that point in the game, that the river was the highway. That was the way you were going to get goods and services out of here if you were manufacturing them. And so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
A guy wanted to build some tractors.
Yeah, that's right. A bit of biggie. You mentioned it earlier, but I think it's important that you mention that other things happened prior to GM, which we're leading to. But yeah, it was 1918 through 23. It started in 1918, and then by General Motors. And by Valentine's Day of 1923, the plant started producing the Chevy automobiles. And so for nearly a century, GM became the economical heartbeat of the city. And we all know employed thousands of local residents and really kind of shaping, Janesville and its families. And one thing about a fun fact about in 1923, so again, the plant started producing the vehicles in February of 23. Several months later, one of the Chevys that was produced was actually donated to us, the Historical Society. We own it, and we actually had it on display at our recent vintage Cars and Stars show that happened back here in Father's Day. So
the Historical Society has a 1923 Chevy that came
correct.
Off that
Yes, sir. Oh. Yes, sir. Yep.
I did not know
that. It was
a few
months after the first production
of
the Chevys. So
that's pretty impressive. I forget. I think the last one to come off that line is owned by a private citizen now, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was raffled off or something to that degree. But that it is still around. I know.
Well,
too,
and we do have our GM exhibit, and their the infamous 100 million car was also donated to us, which is also on display in our exhibit.
That's the blue. Is it a Caprice?
It's an Impala.
Impala, yeah. That's right, yeah. I've seen that, and that's, there's a lot of history there. And, then you get to the point where, now at least you can talk about Granddad and whoever that worked at the plant, and it becomes a little more real. But when you think of it, so GM and Samsung Tractor, I don't know how the relationship and the transfer there. Samson started in the early 1900s, I think,
believe so.
Memory serves, but they were almost an entire century after the first settlers,
right?
90 years.
90 years,
which is really remarkable.
It's kind of mind blowing, isn't it?
How do we? Yeah, I mean, so as long as GM was here, basically. As part of the Janesville community, GM wasn't.
Yeah.
When you look, it was smaller back then, obviously, but that's kind of an interesting perspective to note.
Yeah. It is kind of mind-blowing, for sure. So,
you, of course, have more history in storage and whatever than most people could probably hope to learn about in their lifetimes. You every day you go to work at that campus there, and you, I'm sure, look out on or walk past or wherever you park at the Lincoln Tallman House. And a lot of people still are not necessarily familiar with all the interconnectivity of that. The Historical Society owns and maintains the house, right?
Correct.
So you've got that now. And back then, I seem to recall a time when the Historical Society was not on that campus. They still maintained the house, and I know there was some transition history that went through that to get you where you are today there, and now it's a beautiful campus, and you can have a lot of events, and you can do things. But the reason that, you know, people said we got to save that house back in the day was because it was historic, because President Lincoln.
That's right. Yeah. So there. In October of 1859, he was on his campaign through Wisconsin, and he stayed at our Tallman House. And so, again, it's an opportunity for the community to get a tour and see all the wonderful things in that house. It's a big, beautiful house, but we also have the room that Abraham Lincoln stayed in, along with the bed that he slept in.
Ooh, that's still the actual bed?
Yep.
Wow. And do we know this? A lot of the history we know from that home is because were the Tallmans journal keepers or diary writers or whatever, or is it just kind of?
It's my understanding that the Tallmans, were just a well-to-do family that had all walks of life come through and stay with them throughout their time. And. And it was word that Abraham Lincoln was in the community, and they invited him. He stayed with them, and that's how the story goes.
Well, it's a very intriguing story, and you've got all kinds of historical references and documents and photographs and pieces that adorn that home. Yep. And if you want to learn a little bit more about our history on the 4th of July weekend, are you having hours this weekend at all?
No, we are. We are going to be closed down in recognition of the 4th. But I would just say, take a look at our website, rchs.us, and we just updated it. It's a beautiful website, and there's opportunities to see things, but also people can purchase historical pictures, and has opportunities to, purchase things that are historical related, so specifically pictures. And our normal hours, Thursday through Saturday, from 10 to 4.
Starting next week again.
Starting next week again. That's correct. So we will be open this Thursday. So we encourage people to come down. Yep.
All right. So. There's a lot of history to be found there at the Historical Society, and including, two of the biggest manufacturers. You can argue whether there should be some other companies represented, I suppose, over time.
And one thing I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, I think it is a Caprice Classic. I said Impala, so I think I might be wrong on that.
Again,
I know I got some purists out there that are really going to get me on that.
That was rattling around up here, Paul, I don't trust the stuff that rattles.
I got myself in a tough spot here because I'm sure people will be checking me on that one. So.
Well, I think earlier in the show I might have said Wisconsin's statehood was 1858. Yeah. I'm not sure if I goofed that up the first time or not.
Well,
either,
I think I'm overusing the phrase drinking from the higher hose, but that's still my reality. So if I said it wrong out there, folks, forgive me on that one.
Well, and that's just it. We can all learn history at any given time, and I think it brings us closer to our founding and the reasons that we, ultimately wanted to leave the control of Great Britain to begin with.
Yeah.
So, look back on it. But look back on your own history, and I think it's fun to do nowadays, quite honestly.
Yeah,
and the Historical Society is a great place to do it.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful journey. 5 months I've been there, and history just keeps pouring into me. I love it.
So we had the big car show.
Yes.
Over Father's Day. That went well, I am told.
Yep. All things considered. I mean, the purists, they look at the forecast, and rain was in the weather the whole day. I know all the rest of the community, I think, was shutting down, but we kept it on, and we made it up to the last hour of the event and started raining. So, but we had a nice turnout. Community came out, and it was just a great event.
So you're now working, I'm sure, on planning the Arts Fest.
Yes. 68th Annual Tallman's Art Festival, August 1st and 2nd. So from 10 to 4 on Saturday and 10 to 3 on that Sunday. So it's all listed on our website, and we will have some wonderful artists that'll be on display, and community to come out and check us out.
All right. Well, mark that in your calendar. It's 1 month from today.
That's right. Exactly.
All right. And you can always go to the Historical Society. There's a lot more minute things there that people can discover as well. It's not just about the big things. There's all kinds of books and documents and
stuff. We've got a lot to share.
And if you want to know something, you can go down there and ask. And you have a couple of volunteers out there that'll research stuff for you. And kind of help you along on your historical journey, if you will. But just for reference, 1835 was the very first settlement.
That's correct.
Started Janesville.
That's right.
It's a long time ago. But
a great piece of history for sure.
Indeed. All right, Paul. Hey, enjoy your semi-quincentennial celebration.
Likewise, Tim. Yeah.
I just love saying that now that I can finally say
it. I don't think I can rattle it off back at you.
It took me, you know, a long time. I just kind of pieced it together. And now I'll
now can you spell it?
I believe I probably can, but I don't think people want me to. So we'll just leave it at that. Paul, enjoy your weekend, and thanks for all you do in putting together programming and historical tours and those kinds of things. It's a great piece to have in our community, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, I always appreciate being here. Thanks a lot, Tim.
All right, take care. That's going to wrap us up for today. Tomorrow it's the big trivia question throwdown thing. It's the official name of it. Mark Barry and I, and you all, we've retooled a little bit so that you get a chance to play along with us, and we'll have some fun as we lead into the 4th of July weekend. We'll see you then, starting 9:10 tomorrow on WCLO.